Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Happy Friday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. Hope your Friday is treating you well, and hopefully you are set for an incredible weekend that includes a Packers victory over the San Francisco 49ers. A quick shout out to really a lot of people who have been doing a lot of gifted memberships in the live chats. We're now over 800 members signed up. Now, some of those, again, are gifted memberships, but it is still absolutely amazing. And just the generosity of the community to get those memberships out there. For anyone that I may miss in shouting out, obviously we've had like 250, 300 gifted memberships. So to read through everyone is going to be a little bit tough, but just want to say a huge thank you to everyone who has either signed up to be a member or has gifted those memberships. It's been unbelievable. So thank you so incredibly much. Again, over 800 members as of recording this. I also want to shout out Autograph really quick. If you guys have not checked out Autograph yet, make sure to do so. I did an exclusive piece of content for them, an exclusive video earlier this week, identifying five Packers who are playing probably better than you think that they're playing. And that was a really fun episode to do. So check that out over on Autograph. That one is up right now. Also, I will be doing a live halftime chat at halftime of Packers 49ers. It's just a text chat right on the Autograph app. So you can enter the chat room right as halftime hits, and I'll be answering all of your questions. It's been a lot of fun these past couple Packer games doing it right during halftime. It's usually right around 20 minutes. So just getting to answer those questions has been really, really cool. So hopefully I will see a bunch of you there at halftime on Autograph. All you have to do is download the app. It's free. You can use code PACKADAY when you're signing up, and you can get set. It's also the best place to listen to the audio Packaday podcast as well. So make sure to check that out if you have not done so already. Now let's get to the injury report for Green Bay and for San Francisco. Some bad news for Green Bay, right? Adrian Cooper did not practice on Thursday. Sounds like there's some real concern as to whether or not he's going to be able to play in this game. That certainly sets their linebacker position back. Now they have, it's always interesting when I say they have depth there, right? Like we've seen Isaiah McDuffie, Eric Wilson, and Quay Walker play a ton. Now, define depth. Like after that, it gets to Tyron Hopper, who they clearly seem not ready to play, right? And the definition of depth is it good depth? That's a little bit different, right? But they have players who have played for Green Bay all season long. Like they're not going to be lacking for players who could potentially come in and help out. I wouldn't be shocked either if we saw Jamin Davis get activated if, in fact, Adrian Cooper could not play in this game. In fact, it wouldn't be the worst idea in the world to play Jamin Davis in some of those Adrian Cooper type of roles. Like Jamin Davis, one of the things he is a very, very good athlete who you can sort of spy the quarterback, use him as a blitzer. You can do a variety of different things with him. So that could be something that they utilize in this game. That's if Adrian Cooper's out. It's not a for sure yet. We'll get the full injury report on Friday and that final designation. My guess is he will be questionable or doubtful. My guess is they'll give him through the week, as Matt LaFleur likes to say, but that one definitely seems in doubt at the moment. And then we learned, of course, about Jaire Alexander as well, that he has a partially torn PCL ligament. Not ideal. Now, Jaire seemed somewhat confident that he'd be able to get back this season, but he said it, they rested it 3 weeks last time and that wasn't enough. He tweaked it in the game. It looks, I'm just going to say it, right? It looks like malpractice in hindsight to play him in that game. Like if there was, like, what do we talk about all the time, right? Is there a risk of re-injury? And I get like with anything, there's always some level of risk, right? But if there's a risk of re-injury and to this extent where now you have to sit him down for three, like could they have just sat him for one or two more weeks? Was it really going to make all that much difference to get him in 15, 20 snaps in that game? It really looks like obviously in hindsight, it looks like a brutal decision, right? But I think the vast majority of people would have said going into that game, oh, if there's a risk of that happening, do not play him against Chicago. Like you need him come playoff time. Like he is far too important of a player. And I get you want him back and you want him in there. And this Bears game is important, was important too, right? But like that seems like a very short-sighted decision to even remotely try to play him in that game. Even warming him up before the game, like just let him rest and get as much rest as he needs. And now, he's basically said per Matt Schneidman, and kudos to Matt Schneidman for all of his reporting on this, it sounds like he's going to need at least 3 weeks. And 3 weeks, again, didn't take enough time last time. So probably more than that. It's a really big setback for the Packers. It's a really big setback for Jaire Alexander. And yes, the issues with Jaire, 4 years basically now of a lot of injuries, it's an issue. And what Green Bay does in the offseason, well, we'll have to discuss that more on another day. But obviously not great news at 1265, specifically with Jaire, but to an extent with Edgerrin Cooper as well. Limited participants in practice included Kenny Clark, Josh Jacobs, Josh Myers, Evan Williams, and Colby Wooden, and Elton Jenkins, my apologies, was a full participant in practice. For the 49ers, players that did not practice included Tatum Bethune, Nick Bosa, again, Jacob Cohen, Kevin Givens, and Trent Williams. Trent Williams and Nick Bosa, the big two there, right? I still believe that Williams probably plays in this game. This is, again, he's had injuries and he finds a way to play through them. It's kind of what he does. But 2 days of practice in a row missing, it's going to at least be worth monitoring. And Nick Bosa, again, the big one here, where if they miss him, it is such a huge loss for that defense. And again, 2 days in a row now where he has not practiced. Friday will be a big day for both of those players. Again, the bigger one to me, Nick Bosa. If Trent Williams can play, it's a massive one for San Fran. I've just seen him miraculously recover from these at the last second before, but two major, major players there for San Fran. Meanwhile, limited participants for San Francisco, John Feliciano, George Kittle, Christian McCaffrey, Tre'Davious Ward, and then the big one, Brock Purdy. Now with Brock Purdy, it seems like they are very much taking it easy with him as well. And he was a very limited participant at practice and didn't do the normal routine. Usually the starting quarterback speaks on Thursday for the 49ers. They did not have Brock Purdy speak with the media. So I don't know if this is just subterfuge or what it may end up being, but it seems a little bit interesting with Brock Purdy. And it's a right shoulder injury, right? Like, that's not an insignificant injury for a starting quarterback. I don't know what that ends up meaning, and probably he goes, but that's an interesting one for San Francisco. So San Francisco is not out of the injury water either. And of course, they have a ton of guys that are on IR that are already missing for this game. But Trent Williams, Nick Bosa, and to an extent too, Brock Purdy, all going to be worth monitoring on the injury report on Friday. And now it's time to chat with the one and only Carmen Vitale. Joined now by the wonderful Carmen Vitale of Fox Sports, a reporter extraordinaire covering pretty much everything that you could possibly imagine when it comes to the NFL. Carmen, it is great to have you back on. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm great. Not better than Bears fans are this week. I'll say that much.
I want to start there. I wanted to do sort of a recap of Bears Packers first, but I this is more interesting to me because I want to know from a Bears fans, and obviously you're very close, covering the NFC North and the entire NFL, but I know you keep a little extra pulse on the Bears with the other radio show that you do. From a Bears fan standpoint, what's the pulse right now? Is it like, oh my God, this happened again? Because it feels like there's a decent amount of positive takeaways from this game for Chicago. Obviously, Caleb Williams played much better. It felt like a much more digestible game plan for him. I would think from like a Bears fan standpoint, there might be almost like a splitting of like, all right, we got some real positives. Like, it felt a lot better. You maybe didn't save the head coach's season, which maybe is not something you're hoping for at this point. And you got a better draft pick. Like, it feels like there could be a way to maneuver this from a big brain sort of view of like, maybe this wasn't the worst thing in the world, but how are Bears fans feeling?
Yeah, I mean, I actually asked a couple of people, like, would you have rather gotten blown out instead of losing on such a fluke play? And honestly, I think a lot of people, because of the fact there was so much good and like there was positives to take from that, I think people would take that over getting completely blown out because I think you're in a completely different spot about the team overall and about Caleb Williams overall. I said way back, before the season even started, like, success for the Chicago Bears this year shouldn't hinge on the record. It should hinge on whether or not you can see that Caleb Williams is the future. If he develops, if there's tangible improvement, and if you can kind of see the vision of the Chicago Bears going forward materializing now that they have all of these pieces. And that's still in play at this point. And after you saw kind of the adjustments that were made on such a short week for Thomas Brown, because don't forget, Shane Waldron wasn't dismissed until Tuesday. So at least publicly, you lost about a day and a half, whether that was what was going on behind the scenes or not. And if Thomas Brown had an inkling, it still mattered. And the overhaul that he was able to do within the system that's already installed on such a short week, I think was really, really encouraging. And now it's kind of like you're in wait and see mode if you're a Bears fan, because you're like, all right, now do it again. Like, now you have to see if Thomas Brown can keep it up and kind of keep evolving the system and develop Caleb Williams, because there's still so much season left and you are heading into this gauntlet of teams, which is all of your division rivals. It's not going to be easy, but if you can take away from these games, if they can be close competitive games, I joked that this Bears-Packers game on Sunday was the most fun I've had watching a Bears-Packers game since I started covering this division or this rivalry in general. There was a lot of good to take from that if you're a Bears fan. So now you have to see them do it against Minnesota and see how kind of it starts to evolve now going forward under Thomas Brown. But I really do think that there's a little bit more optimism, and I do think that Bears fans' expectations have been adjusted from what they were earlier in the season, which is why I cautioned against those earlier in the season of, hey, let's just be a little bit more realistic here. And that's all still in play.
Yeah, no, very much so. There's so much I want to go into here. I think, first of all, I have a really good friend who's a Bears fan, and I talked to him immediately following the game. And it was a lot of the things that you just mentioned of, like, number one, the best thing about this game was, like, this actually felt like a rivalry game, you know, right, to him. And I think even, like, just in general, you could see, like, these two teams didn't like each other. It felt like a real legitimate competitive football game. And we just haven't always seen that, you know, in this quote unquote rivalry as of late. So I think that made this game very, very fun. And then, you know, the other thing that he said too, is just, like, obviously seeing some of the growth within this team and how Caleb Williams played. And I think all the things that you just mentioned, I think that is sort of at the forefront here. I think what's really interesting about this is that it so seems like we're talking about a team that's, like, two wins on the season. And, like, if Chicago wins that game, they're a game behind Green Bay. Like, they are a game behind Green Bay. They're 5-5. Green Bay would have been 6-4. And it's, like, right there. And it's insane the amount of difference. And a fingertip on a field goal and a Hail Mary are the difference between Chicago being right there in the entire
6-4 and 4-6.
Absolutely.
It's wild.
It's crazy. So, like, number one, just how much the fate of so many things can swing on just the craziest plays is unbelievable. Because, again, I can't even imagine what the talk in Chicago is right now if there's no Hail Mary and if there's no field goal block at the end. This feels like an entirely different season. And I get even, like, who knows, again, what the butterfly effect would have been in those next two games after the Hail Mary if those don't that way too. Like, it could even potentially be better. Instead, it just seems like this ultimate defeatist of, like, well, everything's still brutal, everything's still terrible, and we're just looking for positive signs and incremental growth. And then the other thing that I wanted to go over there, and you brought up as well, is I am very interested to see in this Bears-Vikings game this week, and obviously we'll talk about it more in just a little bit, but you know, now that this Thomas Brown offense, to some extent, right, and I know you mentioned that, like, it's just a piece of it. He only got to get in Wednesday and change a few things or whatever. But now that that is on tape, that they showed against Green Bay, how much is Minnesota able to look at that and adjust accordingly? Whereas Green Bay kind of went into that game a little bit blind as to what sort of offense they were going to run. So I'm very, very intrigued by that as well.
Yeah, that was the biggest thing going in. And that's why I talked about how I thought that game was going to be weird between the Bears and the Packers, just because, A, you know, it's a rivalry game. But B, when drastic changes are made within an organization, that always does provide some type of spark. And the players reportedly wanted a change. And so if they wanted the change, that means that they're going to want to make their guy look good. They are so behind Thomas Brown. And that's kind of what sticks out too, is even being in that locker room afterwards and talking to guys. You know, they all had a lot of praise for what Thomas Brown was able to bring, even though he coached from the box too. So I think that that's something that I was looking at on the sideline, kind of looking at who was picking people up. And it was Caleb Williams that was picking people up. He was on the sideline with his, you know, receivers all on the bench, talking to them, like, doing all this stuff where, you know, things are getting relayed via the other coaches that are on the field with them, all that kind of stuff. So it was a galvanizing way for all of these guys to be together. And so I thought it was going to be weird. Plus the fact that, yeah, Green Bay didn't have any tape on what this offense was going to look like. Now you have a little bit. It's still not a big sample size. And that's why I say, all right, Thomas Brown has to do it again. And he has to keep evolving and showing different things that, you know, last week was all about making those changes overall. Talking to Cole Kmet in the locker room, he told me that basically nothing had to do with the Green Bay Packers that week. It was all about what do they need to do internally? How can they better utilize their skill players? And he said that was really refreshing. But now comes the game planning part. Now you do have to start planning for opponents and figuring out what their weaknesses are and putting together a game plan that exploits those things of your opponent. And can Thomas Brown do that better than his predecessor? That's what we need to see going forward. And that's what we're going to need to continue to see as teams get more tape on what this Bears offense now looks like. And you're going to have to counter all of that. And one of the things I think is such a, it has been kind of a weakness of the Bears is the self-scout part. And we even saw it in this game too, where Green Bay said that they went into this game being like, yeah, if we don't block a field goal, that like we're expecting to block at least one because we've noticed this, this, and this. And to hear that from the Bears side of things, that they don't feel like Cairo Santos is kicking low or anything about that changes. Little things like he kicks all of his extra points from the right hash. You had that timeout. You had the opportunity to set up that field goal, and he kicked from the left hash. So you're like, little breakdowns in things that like opponents are noticing, but you're not. That's concerning to me. Can you get better at that going forward now under Thomas Brown? I realize Thomas Brown is offensive coordinator. We're talking about special teams, but that all kind of goes together in can you self-scout a little bit better and then exploit what your opponent does or exploit the things that you can against your opponent. That's what I'm looking for going forward.
This is a big one. San Francisco is coming to Green Bay for an epic matchup on Sunday afternoon. And with a recent San Francisco loss, Green Bay could just put their playoff odds in jeopardy. But that's not all we're looking forward to this week. We're also looking forward to another winning week on Prize Picks. With Prize Picks, you can win up to 100 times your money with as few as 4 correct picks. And right now, you can sign up and get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It's guaranteed. Prize Picks is the best way to win real money this football season. Which players are going off, which ones aren't, make your picks in fewer than 60 seconds and turn your sports opinions into real money all season long on Prize Picks. This week, yeah, I'm guessing Christian McCaffrey is going to get his against Green Bay's defense, but I also expect a huge week from both Jaden Reed and Tucker Kraft. The best part, whoever you want to go with, there are a ton of options out there that you can choose from. So what are you waiting for? Download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after your first $5 play. Prize Picks. Run your game. Hey everyone, with the holidays creeping up faster than your great aunt's fruitcake recipe, I've got something way better to share with you. If you want to look sharp for all those festive gatherings and maybe finally win that best groomed at the family dinner award, check out the latest masterpiece from Manscaped, the Chairman Pro Electric Foil Shaver. Trust me, it's like Rudolph for your face, guiding you to a smooth, irritation-free shave. Head over to manscaped.com and join the over 11 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by using code PACKADAY for 20% off plus free shipping. Now, you may have recently seen Mustache Andy lately. It was a beautiful sight to behold, and that wouldn't have been possible without the Chairman Pro's Flex Adjust technology, which is basically like the holiday miracle of shaving. And when I needed even more precision to get that mustache look just right, there was the Precision Lock. And when you lock it in, the blade head sits firm so you can achieve a more precise shave, and that's exactly what I did. So get the Chairman Pro today and experience a shave that is as smooth as you deserve. Get 20% off plus free shipping with code PACKADAY at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code PACKADAY at manscaped.com. What are you waiting for? I think it's so unbelievably important, the little tiny details on things. And we talked about it after the Hail Mary of not calling a timeout before that play. He had 3 timeouts right at his disposal, not calling a timeout before that play. Obviously, the play before was a massive letdown, even to let them get into the Hail Mary situation. And then not getting a timeout, everyone on the same page, everyone's understanding of their assignments. And then you have, obviously, the catastrophic breakdown. I think because you didn't take that extra moment to get everyone on the same page, that seems like a very small detail in the moment. And in the end, it ends up being a catastrophic issue. And I think here too, of like just how they handled the play before. I thought Kyle Brandt, I don't know if you saw Kyle Brandt's breakdown on the Rich Eisen show of how it's the play before in both of these situations. But I think again, feeling maybe a little bit safe slash, I don't know if you want to call it afraid of like not wanting to go backwards. I can understand it to some extent. You're in makeable field goal range, but once again, not getting it on the hash mark. That is probably, it's funny. I was on Mason Crosby's radio show here in Green Bay, and we were talking immediately following that game. The first thing that he said was that usually when you're in Chicago and with how, I don't know how the wind was or something like that, he's like, usually you want to be on the right side. He's like, every kicker's a little bit different, but usually you want to be on the right side. And then, you know, we hear later that, you know, usually that's where he takes all of his extra points and probably would have been better on the right side. Now, I don't know if the trajectory would have been any different whatsoever. Right. Could have been the exact same result. But again, it's those tiny details that can really, really matter. And in a game like this, and again, what we just talked about, the difference in two wins for this team right now is just, you know, cataclysmic in the difference between the two. So, yeah, it's really interesting how quickly that can change.
Yeah, the margin for error is just so low in this league. Period. And then, you know, when you're in these high stakes games and stuff like that, and especially when your rookie quarterback is showing so much resilience and does everything you could possibly want him to do. I mean, that drive to win the game, it should have been a game winning field goal drive. Even after taking two sacks, Caleb Williams comes back, hits 3rd and 19, hits Roma Dunze for 3rd and 19, hits him again on 4th and 3. Like, the mental fortitude it takes to come back from that with all of that pressure on you, having to answer what Green Bay just went down the field and did. I mean, I am so incredibly impressed with Caleb's. It was the same thing in that Washington game where for 3 quarters, it was terrible. He could not get in a rhythm. Everything was hard. Things were not going their way. And then that 4th quarter, he turns it on. He gets the Bears to a lead with 25 seconds left so that it takes a miracle for Washington to come back. Like, these are all things that are going to go down as losses, and they are going to go down as, you know, coaching blunders and all of this kind of stuff, but it has nothing to do with Caleb Williams. Caleb Williams has done everything that you've asked of him. I'm so encouraged by him, and that's why I've kind of stuck by him through, you know, even the regression that we saw after the bye week, because it's like, there is so much happening and he is compensating for so much as a young player that he should not have to compensate for. And I just, it sucks because, and it's why wins aren't a quarterback stat for me. It goes both ways. It goes, hey, they didn't win this game alone. They didn't lose it alone either. And especially when you have situations like this, you see directly, Caleb Williams did everything right. He did everything he was asked. Again, you could have run an extra play. Would that have mattered? I honestly think it mattered more that they didn't run an extra play just to get it to the other hash, like we were talking about. Yeah. Whether or not, like, I don't, like, that's well within Kairos Santos's range. And he even said it afterwards where he's like, my kicking mechanics don't change if we get 3 or 4 more yards. Like, that's like 10 or 15 yards maybe, but you couldn't bank on getting a play like that. Right. So you just needed to slow down in those situations. And the worst part is you practice those situations in during the week. Every practice you have a situational period where you go through stuff exactly like that. You've got one timeout, you need a field goal to win, you've got this many seconds on the clock. Everybody operates like that. And then not to mention in games like that Arizona game where Caleb Williams was in it till the very end, despite them being down multiple scores, it was, well, we wanted to get him, you know, some experience in the 2 minute at the end of that game, at, you know, during live reps. And it's like, okay, well, like, why weren't you then prepared for this situation with him? Because he did everything that you needed him to do. Why weren't you? That's the biggest question that the Bears now have to answer. And it sucks, but I do think that at least, you know, you've got something in Caleb Williams, and how we go forward throughout the season now is how Bears fans are going to know whether or not he's the future officially.
My favorite Caleb Williams moment in that game was the 4th down where he was saying, I want to go for it. And just basically saying, like, no, we're going for this. I got this. And then goes and makes the play. Like, you would just tell, like, there was a level of confidence that he brought to that game and swagger. And, you know, he wasn't going to be denied. And he really wasn't anytime that they needed him to step up. And it wasn't, you know, if it weren't for a blocked field goal, I think we would be talking about that game for Caleb Williams a lot differently, probably on a national level, but it was a big time performance from him. Just from a Packers standpoint, what were your kind of takeaways from the Packers in this game? I thought Jordan Love did a better job taking care of the football. We saw a little bit of a Christian Watson breakout, which was huge, but what did you see from the Packers in this one? Obviously just escaping with the win, stealing one at the end with the block kick, but positives or negatives that you saw in this one?
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest thing is still, you know, the red zone, but more than the red zone, it's the low red zone. It's the goal to go situation. situations. I mean, the turnover on downs at the end of the game, or towards the end of the game in the fourth quarter there, I should say, after Christian Watson gives you that huge boost and you get that 60-yard play and you're just like, oh my God, like, this is it. This is where the Packers take over. This is where they slam the door shut on this win. Like, this is exactly what the Packers do. And then to not do it, and then it ended up happening. They ended up getting the score and having to force the Bears into making that field goal. But, like, again, you can't live on your field goal unit being able to block a kick at the end of the game. Like, that was a really well executed thing. You know, you heard that was kind of a last minute shift or decision and all that kind of stuff. And that's a really good heads up by the special teams coordinator, by your guys that are on the line, all of that kind of stuff. But that's not a way to live. The way to live is every time you get within the 10, you need to score.
Yeah.
And that's not something that we've been able to see as consistently as I think that the Packers fans would even like. But I do think that as you keep going forward, you're going to see more of that. I liked to see the pressure coming in clutch situations. Again, that final drive by Caleb Williams started with two sacks. And that's a testament to, you know, the Packers players really kind of clamping down and trying their best. I mean, the third and 19, usually that's not something that's completed.
So getting probably should have been another sack. Probably should have been another sack.
Probably should have been another sack. It's like a guy like Caleb Williams, who is that determined, has that mobility, has that athleticism, all that kind of stuff, is the only one that's going to kind of make those plays. And even then, it's still a very low percentage play.
Yep.
So I liked seeing that. They got after the quarterback a little bit more. I really liked, honestly, seeing the two-way versatility of Josh Jacobs. I mean, he had a career high in, or not career high, but a Green Bay Packer high. Yeah. Season high of receiving yards in this game, and you kind of utilized him, I think, in ways that the Bears defense wasn't necessarily ready for. So having him go over 100 scrimmage yards, both on the ground and through the air, that was really encouraging to see, and kind of figuring out different ways to use him. Obviously, Marshawn Lloyd wasn't able to go after all. We talked about him last week and thinking what he could kind of bring as another dimension to this offense. So we'll have to wait on that. But at the end of the day, you get different guys involved all over the field. That stresses defenses, and just continuing to do that, I think, is going to really get you to where you want to be and where you currently are right now, which is a playoff team.
Yep.
I'm not super worried about it. I know that, you know, the Packers only scored 20 points this game. You want to see more than that, but if you can fix kind of those low red zone issues, then I'm not worried about this team.
No, I think so too. I think that's the big thing, is those red zone issues. And yeah, Marshawn Lloyd's gone through the ringer as a rookie, appendicitis being the most recent thing. Yeah, so he's
that's such a freak thing. It's just like, comes out of nowhere.
It does. And yeah, obviously we had Bakhtiari with that a couple of years ago. Like, it's, I don't know, it just seems to be something new every single time. And for a rookie that's just trying to get his legs underneath them, finally getting back healthy, and then that has that happen, just absolutely brutal. But I'm with you. I think red zone offense, I am in, like, I don't know if it's interesting. Disappointed maybe to some extent of Green Bay against the NFC North so far. And part of this was Jordan Love injuries playing a part in this earlier in the season, but go down 28-0 to Minnesota, go down 24-3 against Detroit, and really we're not competitive in that game. And then it takes a block field goal at the end against Chicago to come away with that win. For a team that's been pretty darn good against the NFC North, and Matt LaFleur focuses, as every coach does, on their divisional opponents, like, it just left me wanting, through the three games, one game with each opponent, just a little bit more. It felt like, quite frankly, the other team in each of those matchups was a little bit more prepared for Green Bay than Green Bay was for the other team. And I'm going to be interested to see how those next three divisional games look the remainder of the season, because so far it's kind of been advantage opponents.
Yeah, that's a good call out. And I agree, especially going down to Minnesota. I mean, I guess that was earlier in the season, but now it's like you really don't have an excuse of not understanding really what Minnesota is doing at this point. Yeah. I think we've seen Sam Darnold, I like in air quotes, come back down to earth. He's still a very good quarterback.
Yeah.
And he has TJ Hockenson added back to this offense for the last couple of weeks. So that's added another dimension too. And Brian Flores' defense has held up very, very well. It's been Matthew Stafford and Jared Goff as the only ones that have really been able to figure it out. And I think that has as much to do with their offensive play callers as it does with the players themselves. So you would think that Matt LaFleur would be able to kind of do that too, given that he comes from the same system, at least as Matthew Stafford's play caller. I'm going to be very interested to see too, like down the stretch, how these guys do and if they've learned some lessons from the first time around.
Speaking of that coaching tree, just really quick, just sort of interesting too. You talked about the red zone issues. Green Bay, San Francisco, LA, and Miami, all in that same sort of coaching tree, all towards the bottom of the league in red zone offense. So I don't know if this is a, you know, teams are just sort of figuring out these offenses a little bit more in the red zone. If it's just happenstance, I don't know what it is, but it is sort of interesting. Green Bay and San Francisco obviously facing off this week, and we'll see. I think red zone offense is going to play a huge part in that because both of these teams have struggled with it mightily, but it is interesting to see all of those really bright offensive minds struggling to come up with something that can work in the red zone. And again, I think part of it's just teams studying these offenses to death and figuring it out, you know, what it is they like to do and try to take it away. But it'll be interesting. I, like I said, I'm very curious to see how these two red zone offenses go against each other this week. Just a couple like other week 11 notes really quick. Lions, Jaguar, it's not a fair fight. That's a varsity versus a JV team. The Lions absolutely demolished them. Vikings beat the Titans. Wasn't pretty. They win by 10. Wasn't really in major, like an issue for them. And like Vikings kind of got a somewhat easy win, but thoughts on either of those two games?
Yeah. I mean, I'm honestly shocked at what didn't happen after that Lions game, which is that Doug Peterson didn't get fired. It just like his team just quit. Like the defense just completely quit in that second half, especially against the Lions. And like, I get it, man. Like they just, they're on another level. They're playing on another level. They know exactly what you're going to do before you do it. And then they have two, three, four different answers to something that you present to them. So I get it. It's not fun playing those guys, but you can't give up like that. And I think that that was why I was so surprised, really, that we hadn't heard that Doug Peterson was fired the next day.
I didn't think there was a chance. I didn't think there was a chance that he was going to be back this week.
I didn't either. But I mean, I guess you can make the argument of like, well, what's that going to do right now? Yeah. That's fine. I guess you can wait until after the season to do that. But it's not going to be a fun rest of the season for Jacksonville, that's for sure. No. The Vikings, I mean, like I said, they're kind of coming back down to earth in some ways. But the fact that they're still pulling out wins, I think, is a really good sign that they're a legitimate good team. Because otherwise, like, if you're kind of fraudulent, as we've seen them be in the past, you don't necessarily pull those games out. Or, you know, you get down and you can't claw your way back and stuff like that. So I'm not expecting, like, a Super Bowl run from the Minnesota Vikings. But I think that they're an incredibly well-coached team. And that's very apparent. And I think, again, that's a testament to Kevin O'Connell, what he's done up there in Minnesota, and why they're able to get through some of these games that otherwise aren't pretty, but they come out on the winning side of it, and that's all you can ask for.
Yeah, I still think they're a really good team. I mean, winning in the NFL, unless you're the Detroit Lions, winning in the NFL is tough.
I know. Right? They make it look easy. They're kind of like going against every conventional thing we've ever heard about. Yeah. Oh, it's hard to win in the NFL. Well, not if you're the Lions.
It's interesting. Like, well, we can transition to this in a moment, but they're facing the Colts this week, and it's like just a 7-point spread. And I'm like, you sure? Because it feels like it should be 50. Like, it feels like they could just go through anyone at any moment. We'll get to that in just a second. Before we get to week 12, want to hear your thoughts on the extreme blow up in New York, where now you've got the head coach that's already been gone. In fact, he's a Green Bay Packers consultant as of now, Robert Saleh. You have, of course, their general manager and Joe Douglas that is now gone. Aaron Rodgers almost got, at least the owner wanted him benched earlier in the season. He remains the starter right now. They go all in to get Davante Adams too. That has not worked out. It is a absolute mess in New York, and it's going to get worse before it gets better, but they have already started to nuke some things in New York for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I never really thought this was going to go well for New York, to be honest. And I do think that it was really funny to hear like early on the show that AR goes on every week to question Goody's intelligence, motivation, strategy, when we have plenty of examples that Goody knows exactly what he's doing when it comes to team building. And you could argue that honestly, the biggest mistake that he's made is not letting Aaron Rodgers go sooner and paying him that money earlier to really no avail.
Yep.
I think that that's probably the biggest blemish right now on Brian Gutekunst's resume. So I just, you can't give the keys to a guy that has delusions of grandeur, which I think is what Aaron Rodgers has at this point. You're 40 years old, you're coming off an Achilles injury, that's going to bite anybody in the butt. And playing into the expectations and talking about the Super Bowl and doing all of those things, that only adds to it. And it then creates, again, hyper-realistic or unrealistic expectations that the organization itself can't back up. I mean, one man can't do it all either. So, like, that's even, like, a testament to, like, Aaron Rodgers, it's great that you got this Hall of Famer, but, like, what gets lost in all of this, I think, after Tom Brady did it in Tampa, being part of that team really gave me such an interesting perspective on stuff like that. Because, sure, you go out and you get the high-priced free agent. He woos a couple of guys to come with him. But it's not as if this team wasn't – this team was truly a quarterback away. Like, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were truly a quarterback away, and they were a quarterback that – not only a quarterback away, but, like, they were just an average quarterback away. Like, they didn't even need Tom Brady, really, to be successful. They just needed a quarterback that wasn't going to go out and throw 30 interceptions. That was the biggest thing with this team. But, like, their defense was so solid, and they had so many good offensive weapons. And the organization itself, very well coached, very put together. Bruce Arians had the full backing of ownership as far as everything he wanted to do, because he had a track record. That's all of the things that were kind of missing. Like, he had a track record of winning. So when he asked for something, ownership gave it to him. Yeah. That doesn't seem like it was the case in New York until Aaron Rodgers got there, and he asked for this, that, and the other, but he's not a coach. He's not the one making all of the logistical decisions or the decisions about, you know, the dietitian, the nutritionist, the chef, the sports science guys, the weight room guys, like, all of the things that are encompassing in a winning organization. That's not something that Aaron Rodgers was bringing to the table. So it's really hard for one man to do all of that. And I keep saying, even my fiance was very, like, he believed in the Jets up until about 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago. And I was like, really? So now I just kind of go around the house saying, I told you so.
I got plenty of things wrong on this season so far, but the one thing in my pre-season predictions is I'm like, short the Jets. I'm like, whatever you can do, short. There was so much just chaos and dysfunction there already that
right. It
just, there's no covering that up. Like, you that stuff just eats away at you, and you could just tell, like, it was a powder keg, and just one or two things that go in the wrong direction and it was just going to explode. And they had everything go in the wrong direction, and it exploded in a pretty incredible way. And we've seen just an absolute train wreck in New York. And I have thoughts on Aaron next year. Is he going to play? Is he not going to play? Where is he going to play? Like,
I don't know. I can't see him. I don't know. Every time I think I say I can't see him starting over again, I can also see him being stubborn enough to not want to go out this way. But, like, who would have him at this point? Especially when you realize all of the baggage that he comes with. I mean, that's not...
It's going to take a desperate team. Tennessee Titans?
It depends on... I don't know, honestly. Maybe? I don't know.
Somebody
talk
themselves into it. I guarantee you somebody will talk to... Or what you'll have happen is he'll sit out the beginning of camp and something, and some team will have a quarterback injury, and they'll call Aaron and be like, we want you, come save us.
Maybe it'll be one of those stories, like, because, like, Tom, I think, has now told the story about, like, how after he retired, even the second time, like, the Niners wanted him, and, like, they wanted, like, he wanted, like, wanted him to come out of retirement, and he didn't end up doing it. But maybe this is something that Aaron Rodgers then ends up doing. He retires and then comes out of it. Yeah, once, I mean, he doesn't want to do training camp and OTAs really anyway.
One of the Brett Favre things he hasn't done yet quite is retired and then unretired. He's got to check that one off still. So a lot of ball game left, I guess. Let's get to week 12 really quick. Bears, Vikings, and Lions, Colts. Anything that you're looking for in those two? I know right now is a tough time for everyone. Grocery and gas prices are soaring, and with the holidays coming up, we could all use a little bit more disposable income. And when you've got less than stellar credit, your options can be limited. But I've got some great news for you. Kickoff can simplify credit building with plans that are the fastest and easiest way to safely jumpstart your credit, making what feels impossible possible. And best of all, no credit check is required. I absolutely love Kickoff because of its simplicity and its results. Now, I discovered Kickoff online and it helped me build my credit fast. And as far as those results, users with credit under 600 increased their credit by an average of 28 points in the first month. It's simple. You make on-time payments, credit bureaus see your good behavior, and your credit grows fast. and you can start building credit immediately for only $1 in your first month. Want more proof? Kickoff has over 100,000 positive reviews on the App Store, and 98% are 5 stars. So join over a million people building credit with a Kickoff credit account today. Build your credit fast with Kickoff. Get your first month for $1. That's 80% off the normal price when you go to getkickoff.com/packaday today. That's Kickoff without the C. Get KIKOFF.com/packaday. Must sign up via getkickoff.com/packaday to activate the offer. Offer applies to new Kickoff customers first month only, subject to approval. Average impact of 28-point credit increase in the first month based on Equifax VantageScore 3.0 changes for Kickoff customers with starting credit below 600 who made their first on-time payment between January 2021 and March 2024. Payment and credit activity outside Kickoff can have an impact on your credit. Terms and conditions may apply. Offer subject to change. Individual results may vary.
Yeah, Bears, Vikings, I'm really, again, it's just all about can Thomas Brown continue kind of this trajectory? Can Caleb Williams continue the trajectory of developing? And he's going to have a hell of a time doing that against Brian Flores, because I do think that Brian Flores is going to bring so many different things. And again, with a young quarterback that already hasn't seen a lot defensively, Brian Flores, even the best quarterbacks, is going to throw them into a blender in a lot of ways, because he does a lot of unconventional things. His players operate very unconventionally. They do things that are very outside the norm for their position roles and stuff like that. I think that's what makes it so difficult to really pin down this defense. And obviously, they're really aggressive. So I think at the end of the day, Brian Flores is going to really try to overload that Bears offensive line, which is a little bit more stable injury-wise now. They had both their tackles back against the Packers. No Tevin Jenkins, but he hasn't really finished a game for them anyway. Right. So you kind of were used to those interior spots rotating a little bit. Ryan Bates had to go out and come in and or come back in, and there was a little bit of shuffling there too. But I do expect Brian Flores to really make this difficult, make life difficult on Caleb Williams. So how he fares there is going to be really interesting. But then, yeah, as far as the Lions, they're so much fun, and they're having so much fun. So I really am looking kind of at the Colts have a really good offensive line. I don't think we're talking enough about how good that Colts offensive line is. It's one of the only ones that can contend with the Lions offensive line for that matter, as far as like the best unit in the league. I think you look at them, you look at the Eagles, you look at the Lions, all three of those are just really, really excellent offensive lines. And so how does this Detroit D-line, you know, kind of contend with that and try to get to Anthony Richardson? I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I don't see that going very well, even if the line holds. It's just, you've got Brian Branch and Kirby Joseph ready and willing to take advantage of any of those inaccurate or errant throws that we know that Anthony Richardson is capable of. So I don't know. We're going to see. We'll see. We'll see. I'm really excited, though. I think Green Bay, San Francisco is the best game of the week.
I think it is. Let's get into that one, because I think this is a massively fun game. From an injury standpoint, sounds like George Kittle saying he's going to go. We're recording this before getting the injury reports for the 49ers, at least on Thursday. Mm-hmm. But Nick Bosa, we know, has been banged up, and there's a lot of questions as to whether or not he's going to be able to play in this game. Jaire Alexander did not practice again on Thursday. Another player who did not practice, was Edgerrin Cooper. Ends up with a hamstring injury. It sounds like he is very much in doubt potentially for Sunday. So that could be a big injury for them as well. The 49ers, besides even their injury report, massively just banged up across the board. A lot of guys on IR, and they got almost a Pro Bowl team on IR at this point. And then, you know, they also have, obviously, again, guys like Trent Williams, Brock Purdy, George Kittle, that even though they may play, are not certainly at 100%. So either way, this is still going to be a really fun game, but injuries could play a part in this as well. What are you kind of watching for in this one?
Yeah, it's the injuries, but it's the injury, how that affects a team that is actually really good on third and fourth down. The 49ers, I believe they are eighth as far as conversion rate for third and fourth down this season. And when you have, though, some of your playmakers, and especially if Trent Williams isn't 100%, that's the biggest thing to me of, can you still convert? Can you still stay on the field? Can you sustain drives in that way? And as well as you have been when some of your clutch players are either not out there or aren't at 100%. Again, George Kittle is like a third down conversion factory. He's a guy that Brock Purdy relies on incredibly. So if he's going to go, that's great. But is he really at full strength? Is he going to be capable of kind of laying out for some of those catches that otherwise he would make. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I think that there's a potential for Green Bay to kind of take advantage of that. Again, keep going on this pressure train and hoping that, you know, some of these, like you found some pressure again in clutch situations against the Bears. Can you keep that train rolling against a 49ers offensive line that is really good, especially when Trent Williams is in there? Pretty much only if Trent Williams is in there, although we've got some other good guys along that front as well. So I am very interested to see kind of how that goes. And I really, again, think like you've got so many different weapons and Jordan is so good with so many of his receivers and he has that rapport that where any single one of them can pop off any given game. And again, this last game against the Bears, it was Christian Watson, but Christian Watson in spurts. I mean, he had a career high 150 yards, but he only had four catches.
And four,
I mean,
targets, it's not
like, and four targets, right, on four targets too. So like he caught all the targets that came his way, made the most out of them, but it's not as if this guy is, you know, he might be an X receiver. He's not wide receiver one.
Yeah.
And I think that those two kind of positions get conflated a lot of the time where that isn't necessarily the case. Like you're isolating him, sure, but that doesn't mean that you're going to him all the time. And we all know that Matt LaFleur doesn't want to have a wide receiver one, but that's why this is such an effective offense. So keep going with that. I think we talk about so many times how many options the 49ers have. And now they're going up against a team that, sure, they don't have the star power, but they absolutely have more options than defenses can account for.
They certainly do. Going back to that 49ers offensive line, their rookie Dominic Puni has been fantastic for them. Mm-hmm. And he's really fun to watch, and he's going to definitely be somebody that the Packers are going to have to deal with on that 49ers offensive front. Going back to San Francisco, they have been a team that obviously has not quite lived up to expectations. They're 5-5. Whether there's a Super Bowl hangover or not, they have not certainly come out of the gate the way that you would expect. It's interesting to hear. I was on a 49ers show yesterday. It's interesting to hear how much frustration there is with Kyle Shanahan, how much angst there is about Brock Purdy. From the outside, I mean, this is a team that still scares me quite a bit. You know, as somebody that you have to, you know, as a team you have to go against, I still think there's a lot of talent there. And I think they're one win again against Green Bay away from being like, all right, let's get this season back on track and potentially going on a run. I know they got Buffalo coming up as well, but I still think this is a really, really good 49ers team. But there's definitely going to be, I think, a little bit of an air of desperation in this game because they got to find a way to get a win against the Packers.
Yeah, it's so interesting because the 49ers offense in particular statistically ranks in the top five in every major metric except red zone scoring.
Yeah.
That is literally the difference in why there is frustration right now in San Francisco versus there not being, because statistically they're one of the league's best offenses. They have the ball. Their time of possession average is the top in the league. They have the ball for the longest per game on a per game basis as anyone. But what they're doing with that is nothing. The production is not there. I think they're 27th in red zone conversion. It's red zone scoring percentage.
Right there, yeah.
So that's unacceptable, especially when you can move up and down the field so seamlessly, so effortlessly. You have all of these offensive weapons. You have Brock Purdy, who is not a system quarterback. He's a really good quarterback.
Agreed.
And he knows his receivers. He knows his weapons. You've got plenty of them. And you've got really versatile ones, too. This offense is so versatile in its scheme, in its players, in everything like that. And so to see the production not be there on the scoreboard is the only difference right now. But that, unfortunately, is what matters most. So, yeah, you need to get better there because otherwise – I think it's very, somebody pointed this out on Twitter. I don't know exactly who it was, but it's very true. I'm getting like Andy Reid in Philadelphia vibes, where like everything's gone well. They've reached multiple Super Bowls. And you can't get over the hump with Kyle Shanahan. So like, yes, he's an objectively great coach and he's the originator or his father is, and that family is the originator of half the league's offensive systems. But sometimes it just grows stale in a place and maybe he does need a new fresh beginning. It's very interesting to me. Yeah. That there's like, I think justifiable alarm bells, because when you're this effective statistically, but it's not showing up in the win loss column or the scoreboard, that is concerning if you're San Francisco.
And they've really struggled in close games as well. And from a red zone offense, like we said, it's kind of like the Packers and the 49ers Spider-Man meme pointing at each other. Like they both know exactly what it means to be able to move the ball up and down the field, but not get the point production that you want in the red zone, which is why I do think that's going to be such a massive factor in this game. Last but not least, the 49ers, just as we've talked about last week, the Packers owning the Bears, the 49ers have owned the Packers as of late. This is a team that they just can't seem to get over the hump. There have been multiple playoff eliminations, you know, that have come at the hands of the San Francisco 49ers. Yeah. Obviously, just this isn't year. That. Yeah. What's that?
Just last year.
Yeah. Just, yeah. Thank you. No need to look back too far. Right. But you know, this isn't that. Green Bay will still be in a good position to make the playoffs, even if they lose this game, but they potentially have the ability to all, but kind of not totally eliminate San Fran, but really put them behind the eight ball from a playoff picture standpoint. What does Green Bay need to do to finally get over the hump and beat San Francisco in this game?
Yeah, it's the same thing that San Francisco is going to try to do. And again, it's that it's the red zone scoring. It's making sure that you aren't giving the ball away to, I think, Jordan Love taking care of the football a little bit better. Like we saw against the Bears. I mean, there was the one, but that was something that I don't think you could really help. That wasn't on Jordan Love. But I do think taking care of the football, making the most of your scoring chances, and you should be fine. And again, trying to get pressure, especially taking advantage of if Trent Williams is not totally healthy, if you can maybe get the best of him in an otherwise you can't. Like, that's the only way that teams get the best of Trent Williams is if he's hurt. I really think taking advantage of stuff like that. I'm very interested to see, though, just kind of the chess match between these two, between Kyle Shanahan and Matt LaFleur, given their familiarity with each other. And I do think that the grasshopper has to become the master at some point, right? And maybe this is the turning point there when you have everything to play for. Because Green Bay's margin of error, too, just isn't – right now they're in the playoff field, but that can very easily change. They're the third, you know, team from the NFC North that's in, and that field on the bubble is very, very crowded.
It is.
So you have to have a sense of urgency about this game. And I think that's all it's going to take, really, is just take advantage of your scoring opportunities. And especially when you get inside the 10, there's no excuse to not punch it in.
I think this, to your point earlier, such a huge game in the NFL. I think this is a shatter point game, really, for the 49ers, especially. Like I said, they win this game and they're going to feel like that's the win that they needed to get back on track. And it would scare me from an NFC team standpoint of like, all right, great. Now they're back on track. And now you've potentially got to deal with them too. Whereas if you beat them, they go right again to they're already at technically the bottom of the NFC West. And this certainly is not going to help them dig out of it. And then especially when you have Seattle and Arizona going against each other, one of those teams is going to pick up a win as well. So yeah, this is to me. And then from Green Bay standpoint, like you said, a loss and they're right there, a game ahead of a bunch of other teams in the standings, and a game up. They go to like 94% in the New York Times playoff predictor, percentage of making the playoffs. So this is a huge game for both teams. I'm really excited to see how it plays out. Carmen, yeah. You're the absolute best. Where can we find all of your incredible work?
Just go to Carmen V on Twitter, on Instagram, and now on Blue Sky. Because I'm trying to make that happen with everybody else. It's a nicer place. I like it there.
I very much enjoyed it as well. I can't quite give up Twitter yet.
I know, not yet.
A lot of good stuff that goes on there too. But obviously, it's a new environment. It's fun. It's fun to see people over there and just different scenery, if nothing else. So right. I'm over there as well. You can find her at both places, at Carmi V. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.